Stacy, as you all know, is originally from New York. She has an MFA in poetry. She has been teaching as a PhD candidate at University of Pittsburgh. She has not only a book called Choke that came out that won the Frank O'Hara Prize in Poetry, but she also has this book, Love, Poem to Androgyny, which came out in 2006. Her poems have appeared everywhere, and or nearly everywhere. And then this really remarkable book, The Lake Has No Saint, was published in 2010 by Tupelo Press. A big, amazing, cool, wonderful book. For sale tonight. She seems to have a few friends here tonight. And there's a CD too. She's been, as some of you, I guess, have noticed, she's been teaching through the Mad Women program at Carlo University. There seem to be one or two people here from that program. Woo! Okay. And in part, we are celebrating that we've been lucky enough to have Stacy in Pittsburgh for these last few years, and we're going to certainly wish to give her a big, hearty, heartfelt send-off as she goes to the University of Nebraska at Lincoln, and we hope she has a great time there, and we sure hope she comes back and visits us. And it is my pleasure to introduce the amazing Stacy Waite.
Thank you. I will try not to cry tonight and ruin my image here in the city of Pittsburgh. I was just telling Ed Ochester when we got here tonight that when I first got to Pittsburgh 13 years ago, I was a new MFA student at the University of Pittsburgh, and me and my best friend Brandon Somm, who's also a wonderful poet, were here reading for the first time in Pittsburgh at Hemingway's, and we turned to each other, and I said to him, holy shit, that's Jan Betty and Ed Ochester. And they were both... So they were both in the room the first time I read my poems in Pittsburgh at 21 years old. It is pretty cool to be going out with these guys tonight, and I'm so honored. I've learned so much from both of them, and Jan is my wonderful friend and teacher also, even though she was never really my teacher. But let's face it, if you interact with Jan, you're going to learn something. Ed, who is just the heart and soul of poetry in Pittsburgh. So it's an honor, really. I was going to start with some new poems. I'm going to do one old poem first because I'm a little emotionally nervous. I'm going to do one to calm myself down. It's called On the Occasion of Being Mistaken for a Boy by the Umpire in the Lilly Conference Championship. I had learned quickly how to spit through the jail-like bars of the catcher's mask, so looking back, I can't say as I blame the umpire, who after seeing me spit and punch my glove, could only draw one conclusion. You got your cup on, right, son? And almost everyone hears him, and I want my father to stand up like he does and yell, what the hell are you looking at, bub, or bad call, Blue? But instead there's a hush, and I forget the signs for fastballs, screwballs, and curveballs, and all I can think about is no balls, no little 10-year-old balls to match my spit and mitt punching. My mother pretends to clean up orange peels, and the boys yell from the infield, it's a girl! We got a girl as catcher! He doesn't know what to say, so follows up his alrighty with a quick play ball. But I can't squat now. I think everyone is looking at my no balls. They're all watching the girl with no balls. I'm watching her too. She knows better than to cry, so spits again. She learns to live in halves too, as her father says, save it for the field. She snaps, what are you, blind ump? And digs her plastic spikes into the fresh dirt. I have a couple of books for sale tonight. I also have another one coming out with Tupelo Press, who's such a great press to work with. And it's coming out in January 2012 called Butch Geography. And I'm going to read a couple poems from that to start out with. This is called On the Occasion of Being Mistaken for a Woman by a Therapist in the South Hills. You know where the South Hills is, huh? Tell me again, she says, how you liked being Hansel in the sixth grade production of Hansel and Gretel. She leans in close. You've told me how it feels to be a man. How about how it feels to be a woman? And I remember how it felt to play the woodcutter's son. The tight grip of the suspenders on my shoulders, Lila Henning's small hand as she played the role of my sister. How she pushed Mrs. Gladys, who played the conspiring candy house witch, into the oven. I was a good Hansel. I practiced making the disappointed face for the moment we realize the birds have eaten the breadcrumb trail. It felt wrong to be a woman. Wrong when the barista at the cafe says, "Have a nice day, ladies." Wrong when my mother calls my underwear panties. Wrong when my hair is tied in pigtails. I do not speak the language of women, and the therapist is trying to unwind me. She thinks, of course, that somewhere, somewhere deep inside myself, lives the life of a woman, if I would only let her speak. I sit still. I sit like Hansel, locked in his cage. The witch, after all, plans on eating him. If I thought a woman were there, I would go look for her. I am the kind of man who rescues, after all, who thinks to leave a failing trail in the forest. I am the woodcutter's son, unwanted, but finally, after a close call with death, held closely and welcomed home. Yeah, I said the word home and I just got all choked up. Gosh. Tough it up. Man up, Stacey. Wait, man up. Yeah, what do you guys think? Road trip, everybody. This poem is called Tits. First day of school, seventh grade, Jackie Bachman says, "Hey, you got your tits this summer." And I roll my shoulders forward. And even as I do it, the huge wrecking balls of that summer press their flesh on my hanging belly. "Shut up, bitch," I say, pretending to speak in the language of girls. Girls with white candy sneakers. Girls with high hair. Girls with blue abyss of eyeshadow. Girls wishing so desperately for gigantic, perky, and bouncing tits. Jackie saunters off. And when she's far enough out of sight, I run. Past the Dugard's choo-choo train mailbox, over Mr. Sandler's blindingly green no trespassing suburban lawn, through my father's piles of raked twigs and dead leaves, and I reach the door, panting and frantic, to find my mother at the glass window, Windex in hand, singing the wrong words to another Billy Joel song. And suddenly I hate her, with her blue sweatpants and her Giants t-shirt inspecting the glass like a complicated plot. I wish my breath would turn into a black smut and take over the narrative of her window. I want to stop the washing. I want to dirty every little thing. "What you running from, sweet?" my mother wants to know. And I can't say I'm running from my tits. I can't tell her Jackie Bachman is a bitch and I don't want to wear any bras. I can't tell her how I ran home carrying these ugly mounds of fat flesh. I can't tell her how with each quick step I imagine a new and pulsing vein branching out straight from my heart to these now expanding dark nipples. Everyone will see them through my shirt. "Your turn to wash the dishes," she says, and I stand scrubbing pans, the flesh shaking with each stroke, my body alive and inevitable. I'm going to read a couple of poems from Lake Nesno Saint. And I'll say it now rather at the end of the reading just in case of the whole tearing up thing. But what's really amazing about also leaving Pittsburgh and just being in this room tonight is like how many communities are present here tonight and how much writing I've been able to be involved in and writers' lives I've been in since I've been here. And I grew up in New York, man, and New York ain't got nothing on Pittsburgh, man. There are writers here. I'm telling you, man, there are writers here like nobody's business, so I'm sad. I hope they got something going on there in Lincoln. This is called When Leaving the House as a Man. I was 16 the first time I saw a drag show. It was, as it turned out, my first time in a tie. If we don't count the endless number of times I tried on my father's ties in the master bedroom, pulling each one close to my neck, trying to learn how to loop the fabric, how to become a man. Here in this gay bar off the coast of suburban Long Island, drag queens called me handsome, giggled when I pulled out their chairs and lit their cigarettes. And when I arrive home late, when I try to sneak in through the back sliding glass door, my mother sees me in the suit and tie. She, for a moment, covers her eyes as though I had been naked and not her child. "What are you doing?" she wants to know. "Where could you have gone dressed like that?" When an imposition of meaning. Naming, kindergarten. I do not like salt water, the class gerbil, or writing on the blackboard. I do not like the girls' line and the boys' line. I do not like swallowing my gum. I will not tell anyone my middle name. The teacher, she tells the whole class my middle name. "It's Anne," they scream. "We know it's Anne." "Don't count on it," was what my father used to say to mean no. The trees never mean it. They spit up fire. They sometimes think they can make stars. No one is there to deny them. Let's read a couple more of these. There's a couple of real short ones I'm going to read together. When learning to be a boy. The neighbor boys look for frogs in the yard. I do not want them to find one. I want them to invent the game in which they are not looking for something to harm. I want them to invent the game in which they are not building villages they will bomb from their plastic planes. They make the bomb noises in unison. They fall down giggling in the grass until their mother names what has been cooking inside. When you wish you had not said. Still, I cannot forget the brown trim of the barn door, and how still we were trapped in the thick fog of Long Island sky. My brother had been bitten in the face by a neighborhood dog who was, after all, put to sleep. And I can't see as my brother would have gotten over such a thing. "That dog is dead now," my father says to my brother as if to make him feel better about the stitches. I do not remember my brother's face or the time it took to heal. It is possible I had not yet been born or been there or been born. And I'll read one more of these. I decided to go backwards in time tonight, so I'm going to read some old poems at the end because those poems, they were born in these rooms, so I was going to close with a couple of those, but I'll read one more of these. When praying for gender. Then there is my crying in dresses. Since I was born, my mother says. She walks the line of my crying. The church dress, I will not. The pigtails, I will not. The long nights praying, "Please God, if you let me wake up and be a boy, I will never say another swear word again." So there are some folks here from the, by the way, if you want more poetry after this, you should go over to the Shadow Lounge where the Steel City Slam team is performing tonight. Some of them are here somewhere. They were here. I don't know. They might have had to go now to the slam, but, oh, there they are. Brian Francis is, he's so shy. So I learned from some of these guys that I could actually memorize some of my poems, so I'm going to do a couple from Love Poem to Androgyny for you now. This one's called on the occasion of being mistaken for a man by security personnel at the Newark International Airport. It's like being born again. These metal detectors are like traveling through the womb. The buzz goes off to indicate the birth of trouble. And the gender of trouble matters, because when a woman goes through, Jimmy yells, "Female search," and a large woman appears from behind her security table. So when I walk through and my wallet chain sets off the womb alert, I wait. I wait for female search like I wait for the bus, that hopeful and expecting look. But Jimmy takes me himself. Jimmy slides his hand down the length of my thighs. He pats his palm stiffly against my crotch. He asks me to remove my boots and jacket, and so I do. And at first, the woman in me goes unnoticed. But when I hold my arm straight out and he traces the outline of my underarms, he makes that face, the face I've seen before, the holy shit, it's a woman face, the pretend you don't notice the tits face. Jimmy's hands change from a tender sweep to a kind of wiping, like he's trying to rid my body of the afterbirth. He is preparing to peel off the skin of my body as he would the apple he brings to work for break time. Jimmy stares hard at the metal detector with a kind of respect, like the arc of it became holy, transformed me on my walkthrough. Jimmy is nervous for the following reasons. He has just felt the crotch and chest of a woman who he thought was a man. He cannot decide which way he liked her best. His supervisor might notice he has not yelled "female search," which he knows is grounds for some sort of lawsuit. He's angry. His blue uniform makes him angry, so that when he's patting her down now, he does it with force. He wants her to feel he is stronger than she is. He wants the metal detector to stop being a gender change machine from which this woman, who is also me, emerges, unties her boots slowly, follows all his directions. And when Jimmy is done, he nods. He wants me to keep him secret, to pretend neither of us had ever been born. So I'm just going to read, I think, three more poems. Okay, all right. Who cares? Some hot people who are on the floor might care, but... And by hot, I meant very good-looking people sitting on the floor. On the occasion of being mistaken for a man by the cashier in the drive-thru window at a Wendy's in Madison, Wisconsin. When a woman does it, I feel more like a man. Simone at the Wendy's drive-thru makes me feel more like a man when she says, "out of 10, sir." And she leans her breast atop the little shelf at the folding windows, smiles. "You have gorgeous hands," I say. I can't even see her hands, but tonight I have license to compliment, to tell Simone I have never seen more beautiful hands. In a perfect world, I wouldn't tell Simone I was an anatomical female until our fourth date. I would include this in the same sentence that tells her my grandparents speak Slovak and my brother is a restaurant owner. And Simone would sway in and kiss my neck and say, "Really, isn't that interesting?" And over dinner with her parents, her father would not forget to ask me about my brother, about whether we could all go out for a free meal. In a perfect world, Simone's voice is a cocoon, an agent of transformation, and Simone is a drive-through queen who gives us all permission to stop dividing like cells, to stop making her leave me on our fourth date and never speak a word about me. On the occasion of being mistaken for the delivery boy by two members of the Girls Youth Soccer League at the Marriott Hotel. I am at the door, pizza in hand, like Galileo with the globe. I can hear them giggling from behind the door, their footsteps pitter-pattering. It is probably their first time ordering the pizza alone. Tipping the driver will be a sweet new power for them. I feel the eye pressed against the proverbial peephole. "Pizza guy's here," she says, "and he is so cute." I pull my red Mama Angelina's hat over my eyes, which are far too feminine and blue and will give me away. And when the door swings open, I am at the gate of a new heaven. I am the cute delivery boy who, after he is spotted by concerned neighborhood fathers, is kept away from daughters such as these. They want me to join them, to pull up a badly upholstered chair to the table and share the pepperoni pie radiating wet heat through its bottom like an engine. I stay for a glorious hour, tell stories about a band I never played in. The guitar has just always come natural to me, I say. I am self-taught, I say. I can play anything you want to hear by ear. Shauna is the one of them I love. Her calves carved out like crescent moons as she props her Adidas sneakers atop the television, which is blaring Prince's greatest hits on MTV. Can you play guitar like him, she asks. And I think on the question of Prince a moment, his small erotic body, long hair falling around his shoulders like a black scarf, I lie again and say, psh, I think Prince is a sissy. I never said I played this role well. The truth is I made a bad delivery boy and felt shame fall over my body when Shauna pressed her mouth against my cheek and called me a hottie. And although when she asked me where the band was playing next, I said Detroit. And when she asked me where I was headed back from the hotel, I said back to work. The truth is I played classical guitar on Sundays for my grandmother, who referred to me as her little Czechoslovakian princess. The truth is I couldn't go back to work. The truth is, I couldn't go home again, either. So I'm just gonna do one more poem. I'm really, again, so grateful and excited to have been invited to Hemingway's, particularly because I just remember standing here the very first time. And Jan and Ed, I love you guys. All right, enough of that. Stop saying how much you love them. Okay. Very, very emotional little guy. There are books here. Jan's and mine's and I think Ed's. Ed's, are your books here? Yeah, are they? Where are they? Are they over there? Oh, they're over there. So there's books there and there. All right. On the occasion of being mistaken for a man by a waiter while having breakfast with my mother. Let's just cut right to the chase. The waiter says, you and your son have exactly the same smile. My mother starts scraping the black burnt off her toast, and the dark chips are falling in her butter and looking like dead ants, and I can't drink my juice, which doesn't really seem like juice anymore. I just want to go back to before Tomboy turned into Butch, before my father's will pulled me down from treetops, before I started making Barbie kiss the Cabbage Patch doll named Lena, before baseball and the movie Dirty Dancing, because let's face it, don't we all just want to be Patrick Swayze? Before collecting frogs and running from the kissing girls on the playground, you know those girls who run around and kiss the boys? Well, they kissed me too. Before I stopped being escorted to public bathrooms by my mother, before high school cheerleaders who were just experimenting, before giving a blowjob, before giving another blowjob, before this breakfast with my mother in which she is chewing her eggs like they're the lint from the screen in our dryer, which is always broken, I just want to go back to before. But I am not before. I am after. After 14 lovers and trying to stop counting, after 13 of which I've left me for other women, after 3 black leather jackets and no bike, after 5 brands of lesbian chic cigarettes, after loving straight women like oh no. Excuse me, I'm sorry. After loving straight women like Sappho poems, after therapy, after touching the first breast that was not mine, after hanging out at sports bars because in the 80s it was the only place to find a dyke who was really serious about being a dyke, after reading Leaves of Grass, after hanging my hat on bedposts, after all, after is all about posts. I am after. I am post. Post-feminist, post-structuralist, postpartum, post-lesbian, post-gender. I am the ungender, post-capitalist, post-office, but I am not sending away for anything, not mailing anything out. I am after that. I am post. I am posting up a sign and it says, stand back. Because not every move I make is the move of a woman, says the waiter. I am after. I am after my mother, who is still before. I am after the stupid ice bobbing up and down in her drink. So stupid it doesn't even know it is always already made out of wet. It is always before, as I am before. Before gender, before poetry, before my rattling knees, before you. I am before you.